Alright, time for DoNotGod.com video presentation. Anyway. Yeah. So, in attempting to communicate, so that's sort of the subject. And whether there are some sort of mechanisms inside of brains that make that not easy, complicated. Because certain rules like logic and reasoning fail entirely. Now, I guess there's some evidence of that in the sense that our system of justice makes an awful lot of mistakes. I guess I would argue that most of the time people can figure out guilt and innocence anyway, but they'll negate guilt, so... there's a lot of cases, I suppose, where people are technically guilty, but nobody wants to say they're technically guilty because they know that comes with penalties and all this other stuff, and they know there's extenuating circumstances, and so they do something else. but this idea that you could put, facts on trial, and that's sort of what you're trying, is the facts, right? I mean, that's the point, is to weigh them and to, we can't make this, you can't make the scale. You can't make it out of anything other than, our own ideals. And, we have to program it, so to speak. So we can't even make a device that does that perfectly. And so we end up relying on human beings to do it, right? We can't give it to a Coke machine and say, you handle it, doing this justice thing, or even the science thing. So that's part of what this week was for me, in terms of making arguments to people who are supposed to be, intelligent and reasonable and fair and all of that stuff, and they're not even close. I mean, it's just so obvious they're aggressively attempting to deny the truth and deny where the facts point, and, just rejecting, in some cases, without even watching the trial, they're saying guilty, that's just... That's one of those things, just a life lesson thing. You should say, you really got to be careful about doing that. That's the book cover thing. That's kind of dangerous. And then the mystic was talking, hate to bring him up, but, I do still consider him, he's 98%, kind of thing. And unfortunately, the 2% he has is dioxin. It's just, kill you poison kind of stuff that's in his brain, and his nihilism, but otherwise he's well informed and pretty careful and such. So anyway, you don't have to like his whatever. Just saying, there's just a truth about the fact that people talking shit and people, who have thought about it, and he does think about what he says, even if he's wrong. And so that's something else I thought of, just a thought that went through my head, is that, I've spent my, this is, everybody does something with their life right now. I could argue, I played golf when I was, I started, I don't know when I first got to a golf course. I mean, my father played some golf in his 20s and 30s or something like that, before he had a family. And so he never went golfing when I knew him, But anyway, and so it just happened that I said something about it because I liked hitting golf balls. And then he said, "Well, why don't we go golfing?" Kind of thing. And I liked it, and it was something I could. I was just good at it, kind of immediately. And then, you know, one day, you know, on the golf course, my back flew out, you know, and this is when I was working as a, you know, in the restaurants, carrying trays and all that kind of crap. So I had to make the decision that, you know, can't really risk being out of work for a week. So I didn't play golf anymore. And then I, you know, went sort of nuts. And so that was the, you know, the end of playing golf. But, you know, I still hit golf balls, you know, as a recreation. I'm just saying, so this is what people do with their life, though. They get devoted to something or they get interested in something. So I could say something about some other interest. I just use the golf thing because it's one of the trivial, simple things. And, you know, so, and then some people have one devoted interest and they'd be, you know, they just wallow in it. And other people have way too many. And I guess I would sort of argue that I sort of had too many. I mean, I liked painting, so I did that kind of stuff. And I was sculpting stuff and I was doing this and I was doing and fixing stuff and, you know, all kinds of interests. And so I didn't do, you know, sort of jerk of all trades, master of none, kind of ended up being that kind of a person. And then this physics thing came along 10 years ago or whatever it was now. And, you know, that became very interesting just because it seemed it was such a, it was such nonsense, and, you know, what they were saying. And it was just so obvious, made up nonsense. And it just seemed like, well, there's got to be better answers than this made-up nonsense. And the fact is, you could go find them, and I did find them. and I could say, trust me, you know, because I've spent, you know, millions, millions of hours. I don't know how many. But the fact is, I have thought about it, okay, a lot. And I've been through it over and over and running it in all kinds of different ways. And the fact is that, you know, I'm a good simulator, and I have measured and weighed very carefully. So I guess the argument I'm making, some people could watch the whole trial. They could analyze every piece of evidence very carefully, do all kinds of stuff, spend 10,000 hours, you know, analyzing and figuring out whether, you know, the guy had enough time and whether this and whether, you know, figure out every little nuance and say guilty. Or somebody could spend 10 minutes and say guilty. And that's sort of the problem. I guess I would argue is part of the problem. See, I'm thinking there's still this is, I'm still hoping the problem with this communication thing is that, you know, I'm not being listened to, and that's the real problem. And if people listened, then they would, oh, I get it, kind of thing. They'd realize that, yes, there are arguments that just can't be defeated. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, what's his face? The guy I had the debate with, Vegan Gaines. You know, he concedes at the end of the video, oh yeah, I have no rational counter argument, but I'm not a believer. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So I guess that's the real thing you're fighting, is this idea that people have, they're forcing some conclusions to come out their way because they need them to be their way. So I guess I could compare that to a trial where, like, your sister or your brother's on trial, you know, or your mother and father, if we don't have any other closer relatives, or even a nephew or a niece or something, and you just don't want you don't want it to be true that they're assholes, and so you just won't convict them, or you won't let the truth catch up with them, or you do something to prevent because you have this vested interest in not accepting the simple reasoned argument. All right, so that's what I feel like. You know, that's what I'm sensing as this problem here, is that people are reacting, okay, emotionally, based on some kind of attachment, nepotism, some sort of, emotional thing, subjective thing, that just doesn't allow them to be fair and objective, because they're allowing some sense they have, some feeling they have, to negate the facts and whatever you could call a proof that was presented that, you know, what they wish to be true just isn't. And it just can't be defended, and it's nonsense, and blah, blah, blah. So you could argue that this is a problem with religious people, because they're connected to a whole community and they feel supported by the religion and the people in it. And, there's a whole bunch of, investment of their life, okay? It's like if you, let's say that someday people get a little bit rational and they just say, oh, let's not do this football thing anymore. Too many injuries, just to waste. Let's find something else to root for, okay? And but you just spent the last 20 years becoming really good at it. Would you be rejecting or fighting or protesting the decision based on any good reasoning? Or would it just be because your self-interest says, I'm really invested in this and I don't want it to not be a thing? That's sort of the argument, is that I don't have to make logical arguments. I have to make arguments about trying to worm around some idea of a person's personal attachment. And, that's really difficult, right? Because I can't explain how, yes, it is your cousin, but, let's just understand he is a shithead, and let's look at the victim and say, okay, we understand, and it's just a fact, and you have to deal with the facts. You can't do that for each person, because each person has some particular bias in their perspective that, it's just particular to them. And I can't, there's not going to be a key, a skeleton key of recognizing the importance of the truth and the importance of the principles, and the importance of you playing, you being grease for the wheels of fairness, logic, and intelligence, and the truth. You greasing the truth, or you throwing sand on the gears by saying the truth is what I want it to be, or something like that. And so that sort of... it's interesting in just the sense that I'm, these two projects, talking about the puzzle of what does it mean to be alive, what's the value equation, and the idea of just the raw physics of defining how the universe itself works. And in both of these projects, it appears the same obstacle exists. So one audience, you don't know what you're getting. The philosophical one, all kinds of people can show up. One would argue that the physics argument would only attract people who are interested in these questions about the basic function of the universe. But there appears to be, a whole bunch of those people who are, they've invented the New Age religion kind of thing, and this whole quantum thing is a religion, another religion. And they're all invested in, this ESP-averse and this spiritual-averse, and, they took some LSD and, think they, smelled God's feet, and so now they're going to say, well, I got to go do that again. It's all quite, from my perspective, it just seems so ridiculously silly. But whatever, that's people. And you have to deal with them in the state they are in. I can't, I have to concede. The truth is, I didn't really think you had to do any better than just present a good argument to people. If you were a lawyer, you just show up at the trial and say, look, these are the facts. And they would recognize the truth and say, okay, get it. I got it. You proved your case. That's it. And it's not like that. You got to put a show on, and you've got to find defenses against silly shit, where people are given an excuse, to do the wrong thing instead of the right thing. You could argue like the whole, if the glove don't fit, you have to acquit. That kind of, bullshit just gives people an excuse because, it sounds catchy, And, it just gives people who wanted to do the wrong thing an excuse to do the wrong thing. Because they made it sound cute to do the wrong thing. That kind of crap. So what else is there to say? That's the battle, and so that's I had thought that I could just make start a list of questions that you could just ask a person, evolution, see where people are, and then we could figure out what the hanging point is. Some of that's, I suppose, true in the sense that I could just ask that simple question, do you believe in extraterrestrials, or is there some, and there'll be some kind of thing, and maybe that's the thing that the person's hanging on. Like, they have some hope that we're something other than just fucking biological robots, and that the robots pretty much are all built on the same bug design, okay? So we're bugs that are just smarter bugs, but we're still bugs. The agenda is still a bug's life, and our intelligence isn't the pinnacle product of our function. We're still functioning just to feed a biological machine, and the group behavior of the hive kind of crap. So that's another part of this, is that whole idea of you're not really arguing with people for a cause. You're arguing against pop culture. You're arguing against the fact that the most people don't bother thinking about any of it. You really can't argue any of it because they don't even know any of the science or any of the they don't know enough facts about evolution to understand why you're right when you say we did it. and they can't understand enough of the facts to understand why every planet with water doesn't poof living things. That there's only one DNA molecule. All the DNA molecules, all of them. There's so many, right, on the surface of Earth. They're all the product of one DNA molecule. So it's not like DNA even happens. It happened once. All that kind of science stuff that makes it so much easier to draw a conclusion and be confident in the conclusion. And they're just not going to do any of that. So all of those arguments are sort of wasted on them because they're really just not going to bother arranging the evidence and nice, that they're not going to organize their brain enough, okay, to be able to understand why something's right or wrong. And they're just really looking for some person to follow. They're just looking for someone else who they think has done that to trust, that kind of crap. So if they believe it, if he believes it, then they'll believe it. That kind of crap. So whatever you make that person say, they'll all cascade. So I guess you could argue, you could go through 100 celebrities, and if you get each celebrity to say something, a certain number of people, you know, will be compelled to agree once that celebrity says I'm for it. You know, and so that's another huge obstacle in this project, is that it won't, nothing will change until you change the top. You can't do it from the bottom up. You have to get to the top and let it trickle down. So, you know, to use the cultural jargon. So that's another context. And it's so hard to get to those people. And those people are living their own secluded and narrow and blinded kind of life. They're not very good sources of the truth because they don't know what they're talking about. They're just wearing the funny bishop hat. You know what I mean? It's like they're not any smarter or any more informed or any of that. They just happen to be connected to the right people and have the right, good fortune to end up where they ended up. Okay? It's not like they really are better at anything. They were just lucky. You know, they inherited it kind of thing. You know, like some people. You know, it's no real merit. So that's another gigantic problem, is getting to those people. And if you can get to them, are they smart enough? So they're representing themselves as somebody worthy, okay, of listening to, but they really aren't. So they're just more dirt in the system. More obstacles to civilization winning and such. All right, so I'll take a break and we'll see where else I can go. All right, so a part that just occurred to me was, you know, I said trust me before, and I was just making that point. That's not what I would want from people, is just to be trusted in saying that, oh, yes, well, you've thought about it and I haven't, so I'll trust you. Well, you know, who wants that? You want people really to be convinced and to understand for themselves, and you really don't want them to have to rely on that. But the catch would be is that you can take the novel, you know, and you know, 700 pages, and you can do the 20-page thing, and you can do the 10-page thing. You could explain Romeo and Juliet in, what, 2 minutes? You know, and you're not going to miss much. It'll be pretty clear, okay, this is how it works. And you could even get some of the balcony scene in there, maybe, or some other, you could make it rich enough, where that simple narrative explains it well enough. You don't have to have all the details. You can trust that the house they lived in was made out of stone, and, you know, different things that you really don't have to go there and scrape on the stones and make sure they're stones, as somebody who might be an expert would do. Is to guarantee every part of the story is understood, and that there's no character who was a false character and he really was scheming to do some other thing, and that the story was somehow different than the story you told because one of the characters had a malicious intent and was sneaking and doing this and doing that. So there could be a nuance to it. So, I mean, you could argue that, you know, the Kennedy assassination, the simple story works, okay? I mean, the simple truth that Oswald was a nutcase, always had guns and always was politically radical and, never fit in anywhere, never was very inconsistent, hopping from things to things and all that kind of crap, and his life wasn't going anywhere and all that crap, and so he was a perfect profile for this kind of a wacky behavior and blah, blah, blah. And then the whole bullet physics is not all that magical. But what happened? Probably the most people think something's up. You know, there's some sort of more to the story. And there really doesn't need to be. But that's what happens to this. The simple narrative can be perverted all over the place. So that's the downside of the simple narrative, is it doesn't go through all of the frickin' evidence. So again, 9/11, another case, you know, where people just, you know, the truth just wasn't a good enough story. They had to turn it into some other kind of wacky story. You know, all, and the stuff was so wacky. You know, the CIA planting bombs and, you know, like you need a bomb when you're going to fly a plane into a building. What do you need the bomb for? But anyway, you know, just, you know, somebody went in there ahead of time and scraped the insulation off the steel girders. I mean, all kinds of wacky shit. And you're saying, well, I'm saying right now, just even thinking about those things and how they, how there's an awful lot of people who have a reflex that allows them to gravitate to that crap. And yeah, okay, they have some reason to be suspicious. You know, there has been shenanigans in the past, and, you know, it's not like shenanigans is impossible. But on the scale, I mean, you're just saying, come on, this is the whole, you know, we found aliens and hid them in some warehouse somewhere, you know, and the guys carrying the aliens, yeah, making $50,000 a year. No, they weren't tempted to go to the National Enquirer, you know. You know, it just these conspiracies are just so unrealistic that you could have that many people involved and all that. And so, you know, their narratives are so, they're just illogical and flawed. And so they're telling a story that's just a perversion. And the question is why are they doing that? You know, why are they jumping to the wackiest conclusions? So that's part of this, I guess, is, you know, a good portion of, say, flat earthers, you could argue, are religious kooks who are just trying to, you know, drag us backward in time, you know, and so we can all be comfortable being potato farmers or something, as God wishes us to be, or whatever they're trying to do. And, you know, some of that is motivated by that. The whole creation science, you know, just to preserve a, you know, a silly little, you know, religious fable. And so they'll, you know, make up all kinds of crap and even fake evidence and do all kinds of, you know, stuff that's just so overtly wrong, you know, in their right cause, you know. So there is an awful lot of reason to say, gee, you know, what it really does, is this something that is systemic for human beings? Is this some kind of virus that most of the human race has, where they have no, they're not going to be humiliated if they cheat the truth, you know, where there's some percentage of us have the opposite virus, that if we really thought we were doing anything to trespass on the truth, we'd feel, that's a really bad shot, you know, we'd feel like a real failure, like we're playing a really bad game, and, you know, we should be forced to sit on the bench, and, you know, because we just suck. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. You know, it's like cheating in a chess game. Like the guy sneezes and goes, blows his nose, and you move the pieces around or something. You know, just what the fuck? How could you live with yourself doing that? Date rape or something. I don't know. You know, all these little, you know, murders, and people all seem quite capable of committing these little murders, and. So it's a real thing to have to deal with, is this passion, okay? And I guess the real part that we're arguing isn't about the strength of their passion for some consistency, or to preserve tradition, or to preserve a religion, or to preserve some other kind of bullshit. It's not the passion you have to question. It's the fact that they don't have any inhibiting mechanism that stops them from cheating. So that's really it, right? So the real conversation is about the absence of the cheater's inhibition. You know, that they don't have any... I could argue those life lesson things, I guess, right? So, I mean, I talked about the time when, you know, with the BB gun and I shot the bird and I never got over it. I mean, I still... Oh, God, I just cringe that I could be such an asshole. I mean, just, you know, it's... Ew. And I shoplifted once when I was a kid. I had to do it once. You know, I did it once, you know, a couple pieces of candy. And I felt like such a scumbag. You know, so there was no reward. It wasn't like, wow, I got candy. It was really great. No, I felt like shit right away. I mean, right away I said, what the fuck was that? What did you just do, you shithead? you know, you're cheating. You know, you're just cheating. You know, I knew it was cheating. And yeah, it just, ew, cheater, you're a fucking cheater, ew, you know. And so apparently people don't have those, that sense, you know, that, you know, and I guess you see it in people too, you know, because they'll do such outrageous things and then just deny they did it. You know, we had neighbors, you know, years ago at this property anyway, and they ran over the fence, you know, knocked the fence down, made a whole, you know, and their bumper, their car bumper, had the pattern of the fence on it. And they still wouldn't admit they ran over the fence. I mean, it's got the tattoo, perfect tattoo of the fence on their bumper. I mean, you're just like, well, where do those people come from? What is that? What the fuck is that? You know. And then you see people do this all the time. You know, it's sort of almost routine now. I see, you know, people are just such... You know, they go speeding down the street, run over your dog, and then they'll pretend your dog attacked their tire or something. I mean, some kind of wacky bullshit. It's just so crazy. And I mean, just it's, you know, I'm just lamenting and complaining when I'm supposed to be explaining. So this is apparently a part of human nature. That I, you know, from my personal experience, like I said, I didn't think it'd be a big problem just because you learn as a kid that you have this real danger of being an asshole and you have to evade being an asshole. Okay, so that's one of those projects. That's one of those, you know, passions like playing golf. Trying not to be an asshole is one of the games you play, you know, and you want to be good at it. And, you know, that's yeah, and unfortunately most people don't play that, you know. They have no fear of being an asshole. They have no fear of having something shitty written on their grave. They're just not intimidated by some sense that we're all watching. You know, that somehow we will have a reputation we would want to have preserved and not tarnished and diminished, you know, because of how we cheated, you know. Yuck. So, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm now perfect and can't imagine how I would say, you know, some technical thing, like you can only have, you know, four trees in your yard or something, and then I'll have a couple of tree-like bushes or something, you know, and I'll, you can't count those as trees. Yeah, okay, it grows 30 feet high, but it's not really a tree, right? It's a bush, you know, some kind of crap where I will, pervert the reality in some positive sense for my side. I'll, you know, tilt the scale a little bit, put my finger on it. So I'm not saying I can't, you know, I'm just saying that obviously there's degrees of these things, and this isn't really about the stuff right on the fence. You know, this is about the stuff that's really bullshit. You know, where you know you've cheated overtly and for real, you know, and it isn't just some subtle, I didn't, you know, I'm wincing, you know, I'm squinting, so I don't quite see it, you know, and pretend I did, well, I didn't see that, you know, so I don't have to testify, you know. Yeah. All right, so again, this isn't about, you know, I'm not making an argument about, you know, superiority or being better people and all that kind of crap. I'm just arguing that this is the trick, that you can't just use logic in interacting with human beings. And that's a problem, because it would be really nice if we had something you could go to, some common language, where it was guaranteed to work. You know, that you didn't have to worry about translating our, garnishing the dinner, you know, figuring out how to make it look good instead of taste good or be healthy. So that's the problem, is this isn't as simple as just serve something nutritious. You know, it's got to look like, and it's got to smell like, and it's got to taste like, and it's got to da ba ba ba. And it's all that crap that really, it just, you know, it slows the diner down so much, you know, that it can't stay in business. You can't get anything done. You know, you serve three meals a day. And that's not going to work. I mean, from, you know, obviously doing this, I can't serve three meals a day. You know, I got to do better than that. All right, I'll take another break and see what else comes to the mind, what else my subconscious mixes together and says is a relevant point to make in explaining. That's the trick. What am I explaining? So, you know, why am I explaining it? Is explaining it going to help me convince you to somehow have knowledge you don't have? No, I can't do that. So, but, you know, if I can convince you not to be as bigoted as you are, in terms of being small-minded and short-sighted and blinded and all that kind of crap, well, then yes, then maybe I have a chance of getting you to listen to the simple argument that you're not worth giving a kid cancer, right? So, I mean, that's the ultimate purpose here, is to get people's brains in a state where the simple statement that you're not worth giving a kid cancer for works. And they figure it out and say, hey, you're exactly right. I'm not worth that. You can't torture something to have me walk around on Earth thinking I'm doing something important. That really is ridiculous. You can't torture something for that. It's not meaningful enough. It's not good enough. So until you fix the giving kid cancer thing, okay, you can't play the make living things thing, because it doesn't add up. So it's a pretty simple logical argument, and obviously the simple, you know, the little concise version I gave you has the context of you understanding, yeah, there's no extraterrestrials, there's no God, there's no singularities, there's no, none of this bullshit means anything. We're just fish. Okay. With all kinds of delusions of grandeur, but we're just fish. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, we're swimming in air instead of water, but it's the same thing. All right, well, since I brought up the kid with cancer thing, I might as well go with a little bit of those themes of how my personal experience relates to an understanding of that. And so when I thought of it just now, because I said it, I just thought of the terror that it must, how, what it must be like for a kid to be given this diagnosis with this terribly burdensome therapy. And just because I experienced some, just the hair on that dog, just a little piece of hair on that dog. As a kid, when I was 9 years old, I had to have my appendix removed. And not sure I had to, right? I mean, they could have given me antibiotics, I think. But anyway, they decided that, yes, they're going to... Anyway, and I just remember how I didn't react very well. I didn't, this was a pretty heavy thing for me, this whole intrusion, this whole, just the somebody cutting open your body and all this other crap, and it just the whole thing, and then the whole idea that you could be dead because something can go wrong, and all of it, just that runs through, and all the implications of it, and what's going to happen after, and it's going to hurt, and all this crap, and so it was terrifying. I guess you could just say I was pretty terrified, pretty upset. I cried a lot. So just think of that as an experience. It's another one of those experiences that was very negative for my psychology, because it was another experience that just demonstrated I have no control. That life is out of control, that I can't control shit. And I'm going to be burdened with this idea that everything you do comes with these prices you got to pay. So you got to pay for this stupid thing being alive. I'm 9 years old, and I got to pay for being alive. And it's like, well, why? What the fuck? I'm not interested in this. I don't want this burden. Thank you. Was my attitude, and that's a very negative way of thinking. And obviously, it gets you into the whole risk aversion thing. And it's probably another piece of the crap that happened to me that made me become. In some way disabled, by an anxiety disorder that basically made my brain react very badly to anything that introduces risk. if there's any downside risk, well, no, it's off the list. So there's nothing you can put on the list that doesn't have a downside risk, so nothing could be on my list of things to do. So I'm not trying to explain my psychology. I'm just trying to explain why this conclusion, this understanding that you're not worth it, that it's not worth it. And the only difference is that you have to project it into recognizing that all you had was the hair of that dog, right? And if you had to live the dog, you'd really be in trouble. And so it just makes the argument even stronger when you realize that, the calculation is even more obvious, all right, when you include the real weight of this thing called horror and torture and terror and all of that, and that obviously none of this is worth it. This is all frivolous trips to Disneyland, and there's no point in running over a cat for it, or a mouse, or a frog, or maybe even just a cockroach. It's just not worth it. So that was simple, and I thought it would be good. So I can't argue that I have, that these experiences biased me, because I'm going to argue they did exactly the opposite. They made the truth really obvious. Okay, so when you get what you don't deserve, when these negative things happen, they're positive lessons, even though they're unpleasant to be educated. It is an education. It does get you to the truth. It doesn't get you to a lie. So just a fact. Now, you can become pragmatic and recognize, well, I can't live the truth. And so I'm going to live one way and I'll talk another way. And that's sort of where I'm living now, is that I'm accepting that I'm distractible and frivolous in some ways and trivial, and I can, wallow in those trivial pleasures and happinesses and joys or whatever you want to call them, distractions. And then I can do my job, spending some time contemplating these questions and using my capacity to reason, to whatever you want to say, to say it better or to compose a model or to connect the dots, however you want to, But anyway, so, all right, so I'll think about why this part is only pertinent to the fact that, again, it's just illustrating that, yes, this is how we learn, is through these experiences, and they can prejudice us, but they can also be informative. So it's informative so I'm trying to draw the line, right? I mean, it's very informative if, you're in a car accident and your wife gets killed and, life sucks for you. I'm just saying you do learn from that, and it shouldn't make you blame cars, or you shouldn't blame this, or you shouldn't use it as an excuse, to unfairly diagnose what the truth of it was, when the simple truth of it was is life is expensive. And that's the only lesson you need to learn, is that life is expensive. Too expensive. All right. That's close enough. All right, so my brain went from there to this idea that you're either a pro-lifer, an asshole, or an effulist, an anti-creationist. What was the other? I thought of another word for it. An unhumanist. Yeah, something like that. So there's probably better terminology, but so it is kind of funny. I mean, pro-life usually is associated with just this one agenda of abortion, but it really is more literal to say that, yes, there's people who think living things enhance the universe, and that's just stupid and religious. And then there's the argument that the universe doesn't need them, and the fact is they just leave a bunch of torture and unsatisfied need. That's all they create in the universe. They just give the universe torture and unsatisfied need, and the rest of it is just zero sum. The rest of it is not worth talking about, because the gratifications are so trivial and so minor, and you have to build up so much negative for the positive. There was a cat was in the picture there, and I used to feed the feral cats and all that kind of stuff, and they're driven by hunger and they really don't want to associate with you and all this kind of stuff, but and it's all that struggle. The one cat, I mean, it's a good story. The one cat, I knew him for 15 years and he wouldn't let me touch him. So for 12 years, let's say, he wouldn't let me touch him, couldn't touch him, couldn't pet him, couldn't do anything. He was just leave me the fuck alone. So you could feed him, but you couldn't do anything else. And then I think he got hit by a car, So his leg was broken, and I found him in the woods inside the middle of a giant pile of pricker bushes. So I couldn't even, I had a hell of a time getting to him. So first, I gave him water. That was the first concern. And, then gave him some food. And then he was so, he's really fucked up. So he did let me pick him up, grab him and get him out of the pricker bushes. And, so he did okay. He didn't go to a vet and get surgery and all that kind of crap. He limped and, he did okay. And so, but now he loved me, you know. So it was, you know, he was like my cat now. He was just, you know, I could pet him. He wanted me to hold him. He was totally devoted kind of thing. And it's just funny that, you know, we spent 12 years knowing each other, and he could have been comfortable and he could have been happy all that time. But he just couldn't understand, you know, because he didn't have this emotional experience, you know, that would liberate him, you know, get him past his prejudice against the human, and enable him to, you know, enjoy the comfort I could provide. So, you know, even just being in the house and being able to sleep and, you know, blah, 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 all that little stuff. Yeah, just sad. I miss all the cats. You know, so that's another price you pay for your life, is all that grief, you know, all that grief. And what comes with grief? Sorrow. You know, the grief, you know, is the, oh, they're gone, grief, grief, grief. But then there's this sorrow part that just lingers for the rest of your life, where it's just sad. And it's, it sucks. Yeah, and I just don't get how you pro-sorrowers, you know, pro-griefers. I don't get you. Anyway, so is that, you know, that little bit. My brain is now searching to see if there's some life lesson I got out of the experience. But I don't think there was. You know, just beyond the point of just saying, yeah, look at this line there, this funny line of our existence, where just this, you know, you have to be forced, you know, sometimes you have to be dragged to a better life, and you can't see it until you experience it. And that sucks, that we have to learn the hard way, rather than the easy way of just modeling, you know, and seeing disaster and preventing it. No, instead you have to actually wallow in it, you know, and now it's too late to fix it, to prevent it, because you let it happen because you wouldn't model it right. So I guess that's what it's really about, is why people won't model anything honestly, and they so cheat the facts to maintain a delusion. And yeah, that's something I have to deal with for both channels, both subjects. And I don't know exactly how to do that, so... like I said, I thought the idea of surveying people would be helpful, but it probably isn't going to be enough, because it's really about these psychological subjects that you really have to dig into, you know, where I have to find out who you are psychologically. Are you somebody who can be humiliated by being an asshole, you know, by being unfair, by cheating the truth, by cheating the facts, by cheating me? You know, are you some asshole who can discount me because my hair's too long, or, you know, I say you know too much, or some bullshit? Or are you the fairer cop who says, I'm not going to be distracted by nonsense, and I'll pay attention to the actual subject, and, you know, try to fairly interpret the actual arguments. Yeah, that's what I have to find out. And I don't know what good it does, in the sense that you still have to figure out how to convince the bigoted asshole, this narrow-minded shit for brain, how not to be a shit for brain, how it's not a good idea. And the fact is, I can't convince nihilists that their nihilism is fucking idiotic. I mean, how they're a conscious organism and they're pretending it doesn't matter whether they feel good or feel bad. Fuck. That was sort of another one of the little personal analogies I was going to just throw in, that you know, I learned this lesson about everything is expensive, because my family did a lot of traveling, so, you know, it was nice going places, but I, you know, I got a little car sick, so I was always uncomfortable, and so it was always, you know, I was always paying for it, so wherever we went, I had to pay for it by being, you know, really just not feeling good at all. So I spent an awful lot of my life not feeling well at all. It's almost like school was like that. You know, it made me seasick. You know, and it's just uncomfortable to be like that. And so I'm just saying that I did have to pay for everything. And so, yeah, it gave me an appreciation that you just don't step, you know, boldly go. You don't boldly go anywhere. You know, you carefully step. Because you just don't want to keep sliding down those slopes of out of control and foobar. It's just not a good idea. But then, see, my brain just says, oh, yeah, but you can take that to an extreme. So I was almost killed by a dog, you know, almost, you know, mauled anyway, you know, where it just missed my face, you know, it flew at my face and it got my shoulder because I turned just in time. Well, anyway, and then I was able, it was on a chain, so I was able to crawl away. And so I only got a few puncture wounds out of the adventure, but it was just so close. I mean, I felt the dog right across my, you know, because that's where he was aiming, right for my face. Anyway, and, you know, but it can't make you not trust any dog ever. But the truth is, it sort of has. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, if the dog's small enough, I'm not too worried. But big dogs scare me now. You know, not like I have to run away, but just I don't reach my hand out as, you know, like I used to. I just don't. You know, so it's been disrupted by that little taste of reality. Has made me conscious of, don't slide down that slope. You know, don't invite the dog's jaws, you know, to your face. All right, anyway. Just throwing it in. My brain thought about it. I thought, throw it in. Okay, so I threw it in. I didn't do it. My brain said, throw it in. So I threw it in. All right. So anyway. Like I said, I'm just watching this video like you are. I'm just watching it too. I really didn't have anything to do with it. I really didn't. All right, anyway. I didn't. I mean, this did. Okay, so it is my brain. But I'm just saying the part that did it, I don't even get to see him. Let alone you get to see him. He's wearing me as his mask, so to speak. Okay, my brain, my subconscious, okay, is hiding, okay, behind the robot that is me. But I don't know much about it. You know, I don't, you know, I've never seen him. So, but whatever. I think he makes pretty good videos sometimes, but whatever. I'm just saying, I mean, compared to what, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so till the next time and such, we'll call that a video. And see where I go in terms of, I really don't, see, this is the part. I just don't want to make videos about emotional conjunctivitis. You know, I don't want to have to make almost medical videos about how to cure your anal brain, or, you know, your shit brain. And, you know, I'd rather just do the diagram what it is that we're doing here, swimming, and, you know, eating, shitting, not much else, fucking, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, just a little bullshit. Prancing about, you know, flexing our scales. Yeah, there's not much else going on. And it's not worth it. Anyway. Okay, so till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot.